The Mendocino Complex Fire, the cluster of wildfires burning northwest of Sacramento and Northern California, is now the biggest wildfire in the state's recorded history. About 150 miles away, the Carr Fire is still burning near Redding. 7 people have died in that fire so far. We saw similarly massive and destructive fires in 2017. Before Mendocino, the biggest fire in the state's history was the Thomas Fire, which burned last December across Santa Barbara and Ventura counties. 2 people died and more than 1,000 structures were destroyed. 21 people died in related mudslides. Just a few months before that, the North Bay was devastated by a series of wildfires that left 44 people dead and thousands of homes destroyed. And there's a phrase that Governor Jerry Brown and other state officials have been using.
This is kind of the new normal.
The Golden State is truly facing a new normal when it comes to wildland fire events.
With extreme weather events becoming the new normal.
Fires are now part of our ordinary experience.
Maybe we thought we were done in October, and again, California, this changed, this new normal.
To this new normal.
These kind of fires are now the new normal.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. And today on the show, we look at how we got to this so-called new normal and what that means for how human beings respond to wildfires in the future. And here to help us is Stephen Strader, assistant professor of geography and the environment at Villanova University.
We always have to be careful with the language that we use to describe sort of how climate change is influencing our environment. The new normal to the general public means one thing, but looking at it from a scientific and statistical standpoint, these changes that we're seeing with the environment, specifically with wildfires and other hazards, it's more complicated than that. There's also some variability that we're seeing where we might have one year where there's a lot of fires and another year where there's hardly any at all. So it's not just that we're seeing an increase, but there could also be some year-to-year variability that is also changing. And that's also a result of climate and environmental changes that we're just now starting to realize going into the next 30, 40 years.
So we hear a lot about climate change, and this is something that is debated. It's a hot political issue. But your argument is that these fires are also being caused by something a little bit more than strictly climate change, right? Don't we have something to do with it as humans?
Yeah, that's correct. And the way that we think about disasters like wildfires or tornadoes or tropical storms is we really wouldn't care about them if they didn't affect people. So when we think about disasters, we have to take the hazard itself into consideration, the wildfire, and how that might be changing over time. In other words, are wildfires becoming more common and larger? But the other side of the coin, of the disaster coin, if you will, is how society's changing. If you think back to what the city you grew up in or a small city you visited 30, 40 years ago, it was smaller. And now if you go there today, it's enlarged. It's expanded over time. And there's more people, more things than ever before. So out west, what we're seeing is places where they didn't used to have homes 30, 40 years ago now have homes. And unfortunately, this interaction where wildfires have always been and where people are now are leading to greater and greater disasters in terms of numbers and magnitude as well.
So is it strictly the presence of people that's causing this, or is it something more than that? Is it development? Is it a combination of different things? Is it residents who aren't environmentally aware of how they should take care of their community? What exactly is the danger here of this population increase and, by extension, the fires that we're seeing?
Yeah, so the way I like to think about it on terms or in terms of the effects that humans have on sort of maybe wildfire disasters is there's indirect and direct effects. The direct would be that because there's more people visiting places that are prone to wildfires or living there, the odds of them igniting a wildfire are greatly increased. Humans are still the leading cause and continuing to cause more and more wildfires. The other indirect effect is that there's people, new subdivisions that have been built that are now affected when a wildfire does occur. So it's this sort of combination of how climate change might be driving the conditions for wildfires, but humans are the ones igniting them, and humans are the ones being affected by them more and more because we're living in places we've never lived before. We have more homes, we have more people, or more things in our lives to be destroyed by wildfires, unfortunately.
It almost reminds me a little bit of when Hurricane Sandy hit New York and New Jersey and our region over here, and how after structures and houses were destroyed, people decided to just go right back and rebuild. Is that part of, could that make this worse if people are being, are saying we're going to go back to these areas that have been burned out and just continue to rebuild? I mean, should people be thinking about moving to other areas? Is it that an issue, or do they, or should they be allowed to continue building on these areas that are obviously sensitive?
That's a really great comment. And the reason it is we sort of have coined this, my research group and I, sort of thinking about this as disaster amnesia. And it's almost like we see this time and time again with Sandy, with tornadoes, we see it with wildfires, is the desire that when a hazard or a disaster does occur, they want to rebuild and get back to the status quo. Unfortunately, we see this most of the time in areas that are prone to flooding, areas that get flooded time and time again, and we rebuild right back to the same locations. So it's almost like there's an amnesia there. And there's no incentive really to leave right now in those disaster-prone areas. So people want to get back to their lives. It's very difficult for us to say, you can't live here anymore because it's prone to flooding or prone to, you know, hurricane storm surge. Unfortunately, it may be the best solution for certain types of hazards. But how we justify that and how we enforce that goes against some of the very things that most of us and the freedoms and things that we've been shared as Americans are basically going right into the face of that. So it's a very difficult concept to grasp, but in some ways that is what we would need to do. And unfortunately, a lot of times if you look at the Florida coast, the East Coast, there are disasters waiting to happen because of how we build up against areas that are prone to hazards.
What can really be done here at a policy level? We talked about people, but it sounds like it's going to be hard to get people to stop moving into certain neighborhoods. So what can be done at a policy level to mitigate some of these fires?
Well, to sort of bring it back to the wildfires, each one of these hazards is different, whether it's flooding, it's tornadoes, whatever. They all have their own little niche that require certain types of actions. So it unfortunately makes my life as a hazard scientist more difficult, but it takes a team of people to solve these issues. But it also is encouraging to sort of get together as a team and think about where we're going to be in the next 100 years. And that's important to me as a young scientist.
Stephen Strader is an assistant professor of geography and the environment at Villanova University. Dr. Strader, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We just heard how human development and climate change are setting the stage for more devastating wildfires in California. Those fires also worsen air quality in a state which, according to a new study by the American Lung Association, has 8 of the 10 most polluted cities in the country. Last week, California faced another setback in addressing air quality. President Trump announced his administration plans to roll back Obama-era fuel efficiency standards for the auto industry. California has tried to make its air cleaner over the decades, partly by becoming a national leader on fuel efficiency. But for years, the state has used a special waiver to force automakers to meet its own state standards. But Trump's proposal takes direct aim at the Golden State. Chip Jacobs is the co-author of Smogtown, the lung-burning history of pollution in Los Angeles, and he joins me now to talk about how a state suffering from smoke, smog, and ash can survive. Chip, can California survive this?
We can survive it. We'll just be coughing a lot more. Over the years, we've seen our pollution levels really drop at a staggering rate because our sort of passive environmentalism here, where we allow ourselves to be taxed, as well as better technology. What's a little alarming is in the last years, we've seen ozone, which is one of the prime ingredients in air pollution or smog, starting to go back up. And it feels like we're backsliding against a lot of progress.
Well, one question I have as a New Yorker who drives only when absolutely positively necessary, the question I have is, to what extent in California, a state that you have to drive in, do recent automobile emissions and wildfires actually contribute to California's poor air quality?
Automobile driving here is infamous. About 40% of greenhouse gases, I believe, come from the cars. We're like the leading source of greenhouse gases now. So it's a vicious cycle. You know, Los Angeles, California, to some extent, we're built on the freeway culture. We're not a public transit culture like the East Coast. We once were, but we no longer are. And we're sort of just still sticking with the freeway mindset. And yet we're finding as the temperatures go up, it's that we create this daisy chain of bad news for Mother Nature, where ozone creeps up. We've had the last 5 years have been the hottest in the last 124 years of record keeping. So when we produce a lot of carbon dioxide, it creates more conditions for ozone. When there's more conditions for ozone, that's when people get sick and are coughing, and certain people are in danger of very serious health problems. So we're dependent on the car, and we're also vulnerable to the effects of climate change.
So it seems like
it's a tricky dance.
Right. And Chip, these two things that are conflating here, the increase in the amount of fires in the state, as well as the rollbacks on these Obama-era fuel efficiency standards, seem to potentially be creating a perfect storm, no pun intended, for potentially more fires and worse air quality for Californians.
That's true, but I will bet you a New York slice of pizza that Trump administration will never get remove California's ability to set its own emission standards. California is just too big, too powerful politically, even though it's a blue state. Sometimes people in Washington are a little afraid to mess with California with something so essential. This waiver has been on the books since Ronald Reagan was in office. It was extremely hard fought. We wouldn't have done it actually without the state of New York and Robert Kennedy back then lobbying for us. That's when our smog was so bad. We had smog alerts effectively every 2 out of 3 days. So it's going to be very difficult for them to beat California and other attorney generals. And you know what? The logic is so faulty that they're tripping over it themselves, the people in the White House. So I'm very skeptical they'll get this through. I think it's more of a bargaining position. And what's odd is they're pushing for fuel efficiency standards the car makers don't even really want. So it's, I don't know what their philosophy is, but I know one thing. They're not out here living California, in terms of the environment.
Right. The car makers have actually moved ahead a little bit with this technology. And Chip, I did hear your New York slice of pizza bet there. So just a reminder, it's eaten folded and standing. Chip Jacobs is the co-author of Smogtown, The Lung-Burning History of Pollution in Los Angeles. Chip, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.